Rich Pearson seemingly had it made. In his 20s, he was the head of a department at a top London ad agency and primed to move up. But he was struggling to deal with stress and anxiety, something which became progressively worse even after he left his job. For Rich, it was so bad he was struggling to leave his flat at times, even see friends or get on public transit. But it's in this time where he met Andy Puddicombe. Andy is a trained Buddhist monk who lived across Asia and in Russia, later returning to the UK, where he started a private practice, teaching meditation to all sorts of people. Andy began teaching Rich meditation as well, and eventually the pair began working together, running workshops. After trial and error, a lot of refining, and speaking to hundreds of people, the idea was to create a platform to make meditation, a practice used for thousands of years, more approachable and practical in our 21st century lives. Headspace was launched in 2010 as an events company, but a few years later, with the greater mission to improve the health and happiness of people around the world, Headspace became an app, the one with guided meditations and clever and engaging illustrations many of us know today. Based in Santa Monica, California, the company has raised more than $75 million to date and is used by millions of people in more than 190 countries. Headspace is also used by professional sports teams, major companies, and healthcare networks, and has also recently been made free to use for hundreds of thousands of teachers and students in the U.S., with a plan to take that model global. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For today's episode, I had the great pleasure of sitting down with Rich at Midori House to walk through the story of Headspace.
I was very lucky. I started off my career at McCann Erickson as a graduate trainee, which was an incredible experience. I got a lot of skills. And then about 9 or 10 months into that graduate training scheme, I got poached by BBH. And BBH at the time was on the back of, you know, I think they just won Agents of the Year like 3 times in a row. So it was an awesome opportunity for me. And I got given a lot of opportunity really early on. I was kind of one of the leading team on Axe, which was the deodorant brand, which I'm probably paying back all the negative karma that I created with those ads. And then I ended up running new business. And then I ended up working in the brand invention arm, which was Zag, where we were coming up with brands from scratch. And it was wonderful. And I was working with very smart people. But I don't think I had the internal skills to be able to work with that kind of pressure, with that kind of intensity. And the only way I can describe it is I just knew that that wasn't going to be the career for me. Like, I knew I didn't want to do that, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And at the time, I was actually getting acupuncture. And my acupuncturist had said to me, "Have you ever thought about being an acupuncturist?" And I was like, "No, I've never thought about being an acupuncturist." He said, "I think you'd be really good." And he said, "I've got a course starting next week." So I literally went in the following Monday, quit, and became an acupuncturist. And what was funny, the reason I tell that bit of the story is Andy was actually teaching meditation in the place I was learning to become an acupuncturist, but we never met.
Really? This is Andy Puddicombe.
It's Andy Puddicombe, so the other co-founder of Headspace. And we never met. And so that period went on for about a year. And I think what happened when I left advertising, I definitely felt better at first. But the anxiety that I had and the stress that I'd had from that job, it actually kind of got worse. By the time I'd met Andy, I would say that, yeah, it got to a point where, you know, I was struggling to leave the house at times. I was struggling to meet up with my friends. It became very debilitating. And for someone that wasn't like that or presented externally like that, it was a very, very challenging time. And that's when I got introduced to Andy via a friend.
That's really interesting. I just want to track back to a few things you mentioned there, because you quit your job pretty quickly, but I believe the Friday before you'd actually been promoted, so you'd actually been bumped ahead. But I wonder what made you jump so quickly there, but also, where was the stress in your life? What was the most stressful part of it for you?
There's a few things with it. One, I think the jump was, I just knew that that wasn't going to be the career for me. Like, I just knew it. And I felt the only thing that I knew that I wanted to do was have kind of more impact and meaning. Like, I just felt having been in advertising, like, it just wasn't fulfilling me. And I think that's why when the acupuncture came up, for a long time, I didn't want to be there, actually. That kind of from being very passionate about the job to not being passionate about the job, I think was a kind of slow process of over about a year. So I just knew I wanted to do something that was going to have meaning. And so when that came up, it seemed like an obvious place to, right, I'm going to just try that. I think I would have probably done anything. I kind of had that sense. I would say the stress, you know, I think people say, like, it's like a catch-all under burnout or stress. I hear that a lot. For me, it was a sense of just real anxiety about who I was in the world, what I was supposed to be here for. Like, just, I think, kind of pretty deep existential questions I was having that I just felt very confused about a lot of things. And I felt like I'd just gone down a path. I left school. I went and got my degree. I landed in a job that I didn't really think that much about. I'd done really well at it. I was earning lots of money, but I was miserable. Yeah. I think I was very lucky in a way that all of those things were accelerated in my life at the start of it. And it just caused me to think, you know what? This isn't for me. Like, I've got to try and explore how I'm going to become happy because this isn't working.
So you're doing acupuncture, yeah. And eventually you do get to meet Andy, even though you were sort of in close proximity for about a year.
Yeah.
You became quite close, but I understand sort of the journey you went on is that he was, after being a Buddhist monk and coming back to the UK, was sort of doing consultancy for mindfulness and meditation. Yeah. And sort of where you clicked perhaps was he could offer you a bit of that, and you could offer him a bit of business advice. Yeah. Is that true?
I often say that I think I definitely had the gift of desperation at that moment when I met Andy. And I think I would have done anything not to feel like that. Like, I really would have tried anything at that time. And I didn't know a lot about meditation. I didn't know anything about meditation, is the truth. But my friend had been getting lessons from him. And it was interesting because I wouldn't have expected that person necessarily to be into meditation. So that was interesting in itself. And Andy had this clinic where he had my friend and a bunch of people. He was teaching politicians and footballers and mums and bankers. And he said, look, I've got this clinic, it's doing well, but I'd love to work out a way that I could make meditation kind of more mainstream. Like, could you come up with some ideas? And I had this anxiety issue that I had no idea how to kind of get a handle on. And I tried a lot of stuff in that year running up to it, and none of it had really worked. And so it really was a skill swap. Like, he was my meditation teacher, then he became my best friend, then we became business partners. It was a very organic process, and we would literally go to his clinic, he would teach me meditation, we'd go over the road to Starbucks, it was a Starbucks opposite his clinic, and then I would just come up with all these ideas. And over time he was like, look, you've got all these ideas, I have no idea how to make any of them happen. Why don't we try and do this together? And that was really the start of it. So it was born out of a very personal experience, because I was like, wow, this thing works. And it's really worked for me. How am I going to explain this to my friends? How am I going to explain this to my family? That's back in 2008 in the UK, possibly the most cynical market in the world. You know, how do you actually kind of position this in a way that people can understand it? And for me, from a creative point of view, I found that a really interesting challenge.
When you start working together, though, this is more of a B2B offering or a consultancy. It's not an online thing yet. It's not really a company.
No.
So what did that look like? How did you square how you were going to make money off this?
Well, the very first idea I ever gave him was, it's a shame you're in a room. Because when anyone meets Andy, like, he's just the most incredible human being, and he is a brilliant teacher, and he explains meditation in a way that I can understand it. And I think he's just like so gentle and kind. And I was thinking, wow, this is a really special person that's in a room that can only see like 30 or 40 clients at a time. That seems like a waste. Mm. And this was 2008, so the App Store had only been out a year. And I was like, look, we should create an app and we should put your teachings out on an app. And he said, look, it won't work as an app because traditionally it had always been taught in a kind of oral lineage from teacher to student. So you can actually trace back the Headspace kind of teachings from teacher to student, like 2,500 years, over 2,500 years, which is kind of incredible, really. Yeah. And so we actually started off doing events. I was like, well, you're the expert in the meditation. I'm not going to argue with that. Like, if you don't think it's going to work. And we did actually have an app, but for event attendees. Oh. So they could get access to a limited amount of content, but it was only for event attendees. And the events, look, hindsight's no sight, but looking back on it, they were really research labs. We got 200 to 400 people every 6 weeks. I spoke to every single person that came to those events. We took loads of feedback, and it started off as an 8-hour event, then it went down to a 6-hour event, then a 4-hour, then a 3-hour, then a 2-hour, then a 90-minute, then an hour, and then to a 10-minute app. And it was a that organic process of kind of trying and testing things. And the bits of you answer your question about the business, we thought we'd be able to make money from the events, but it wasn't a good business. And we were kind of forced to go down a digital route.
So you bring an ancient practice to a modern audience by making a smartphone-friendly app, stripping away a bit of the mysticism, I guess, some clever marketing on top of that, really good storytelling from Andy, but it's not as simple as that. This is quite a complicated journey to take the next steps in the company, I guess.
Yeah, I also just don't want to, you know, diminish the fact that we feel like we picked up this story, you know, over 2,500 years in. Like, there's been a lot of R&D that's been done on these teachings, these ancient techniques, for many thousands of years, and we've just presented it in a different way, the same way that it's been presented at different points in history throughout time. And I think all the things that you said are correct, but I think what's always been really true to us is that vision of how to improve the health and happiness of the world. And that comes from the original teachings of how do you remove all beings from suffering? That's the premise in everything that we do. And so we obsess about our members. Like, how do we actually provide a service that is going to help them, their health outcomes? So that's the thing as a team, all like 260 of us at Headspace, that's what we're kind of obsessing about and always have. So it's not that we've always had the perfect answer at the start, but we've always tried to be really thoughtful about how we develop products and services that can actually help people. But to your point, marketing, the animations, the partnerships, all those things that really helped us in those early days were a big part of our success, I think.
Well, now with the world that we live in, and we're increasingly in doing so many things on our phone, it's just what we do, or online. But I wonder about the role technology can actually play, it, because often it's associated with the opposite in the mental health arena and in our lives and how it impacts us. But where does Headspace sit, do you think? I've heard you say that you've actually worried that you're a bit a part of the problem. Yeah. Is that true?
No, I think the way that I look at it is that, so you look at these devices, it's just metal, glass and plastic. So if there's a phone on the table in front of you, it's not doing anything to you. It's not dangerous as it sits there. But what I think is we haven't quite worked out yet is what is our relationship to the device? How do we use it in a skillful way? And what products and services do we use that are actually going to help us and benefit us? The promise of technology was that it was going to make all our lives easier, make it more organized, and give us more time to go and do the things that we love that are going to make us feel connected and healthy and happy as a human being. I think that so many of the products and services have been designed to consistently addict us to those products and services and consistently kind of create these loops. And I would hope that Headspace, we don't want you to be constantly checking the product all the time. We want you to use it in a skillful way and then go out in the real world and use those skills that you've learned on the device and then go and apply them to improve your relationships, to improve your sleep, maybe to work on your anxiety or your performance as an athlete. I think that is really how we think about technology. We see it as a delivery mechanism to meet people where they are. So I don't think that we've become part of the problem. I just don't think that as a body of people, we've fully worked out how to use them in a skillful way. And my hope is that we will work that out. My other big hope is that the big platforms and the big products and services are going to start to design these products in a way that promotes healthier usage so that they can actually help consumers kind of react to them in a different way than they currently are.
You touched on it there that the big idea is taking away some of the lessons and the guidance in the app into our everyday lives. And I think about myself, I've practiced a lot of meditation, tried a lot of things, visualization for my career as an athlete, all these things. And now my relationship with Headspace is often getting a notification that the app misses me because I'm not actually opening it, even though it's sitting right there. I am a subscriber, but you're taking these lessons into your life. So what is the most important part of it for Headspace in that journey? Getting the message right? How do you square that? How do you think about that?
We think about it a lot. I think about it a huge amount. And I think a few things. So if you take notifications, for example, we get a lot of feedback from our members that that's actually one of their favorite parts of the Headspace product. And one of the biggest tech companies in the world actually reached out to us to say, we think that you are best in class of all the apps that we have on our platform. You're best in class in how you communicate with your notifications. And we've tried to turn them, the majority of them, into moments of reflection. And I think that's really important, that when we're lost in thought and we're consistently thinking, we're overthinking, that's what leads to anxiety. That's what leads to unhappiness. If you can pause and reflect and be curious by asking a question, you automatically kind of brought back into the present. You're not lost in thought. And so there's actually something really valuable in that little moment via a notification. So that can be really, really useful. That's another great example of like how I think we can use tech kind of for good and use... It's not that notifications are bad. It's how are they kind of used. And on that, the one that you mentioned around, you know, Headspace misses you, it's like, I think the actual message is when you need us, we're here for you. We miss you. That kind of idea that you never know when something's going to happen in your life and you might need some help or support. I always think about this with the team. It's like every single person will have like four major life events in a year, good, bad, or indifferent, but four things maybe in a year that are going to affect how they kind of feel. And I would hope that Headspace, if you're a member, a free member or a paid member, that you feel like Headspace is always there for you as a kind of trusted friend, no matter what you're going through, without being kind of too pushy. And so that's how we've tried to get that balance. Like, do we always get it right? I'm sure we could always improve on it, but we do think about that stuff pretty deeply.
You've already mentioned it, the research and development side of the company, of the app. What does that look like? What are you working on?
So, well, there's a few things. I think one of the things that became very apparent to our vision was, so if you think about improving health and happiness in the world, and to come back to one of your early points about our hope is that that vision becomes your vision as a member of the service. We hope that maybe you've come to us because you've got a thing to solve, but our hope is that you use the product and actually the people that are around you are the people that benefit. Right. The more that you practice, the more that you can benefit. And that thinking has led to us really trying to work out what is the impact of the products and service, which has meant that we've invested a lot in science. We've talked a bit about authenticity already, but to think about that 2,500 years of R&D, we're now being able to use modern science to prove out, okay, what does Headspace actually do? So we've got Dr. Megan Jones-Bell. She leads our science team. We have 65 papers currently in progress, 19 of which have been published in peer-reviewed journals. And the body of research around meditation traditionally has been done in quite small numbers, and it's been done in live, in-person training setting. We were really interested in what does the digital delivery of the device actually do? What does the science look around that? And how can we expand the scale of research? So we've got a 2,000-person study with the College of Policing in the UK, another 2,000-person study with the NHS in the UK, and then another 3,000-person study with the Universities of California, with faculty and students. And that's longitudinal studies, multi-site. Most meditation studies, even the biggest ones, are kind of 1 to 200 people. And so those results will be coming out in a few months. And that work has led us to really thinking about how do we become part of healthcare? How do we become part of schools? How do we become part of kind of training for doctors, for nurses? And we actually are at the moment currently looking at FDA approval. We've set up a separate subsidiary called Headspace Health, where we are trying to prove out Headspace could be a successful digital intervention for a whole range of chronic diseases, be they physical or mental. We've identified over 20 that we think we could potentially have impact on. And we have a team of about 10 full-time team members that are working on that to try and get to that point. So in the next kind of 2 to 3 years, we hope that you'll be able to go to your doctor and go and get prescribed Headspace for a specific chronic condition. And as well as part of that, it's led us to working with professional sports teams. We've been at Arsenal this week. We're working with the NBA as their mental performance partner, as well as Nike, as well as a whole host of individual athletes and teams across America and across Europe. And I think that that performance piece is really interesting. Like, how can you use the mind and looking after it and training it to unlock mental performance, either as an executive in a business or as a pro athlete in the NBA? And I think that that whole world for us, looking at enterprise, looking at sport, looking at healthcare, and really putting some rigorous science around it, I think is something we're really passionate and excited about.
10 years ago, when this was just an idea and before you got it off the ground, it was a different landscape for thinking about mindfulness and these things and mental health in the workplace, at home, in general. But there's no way you could have foresaw that this is where the world was going, where it would be more of the norm, I guess, where it's in offices, people are really talking about these things. So that's, I guess, changed where you've gone. And that's just part of the journey for Headspace, I guess.
Well, we did think very purposely that we wanted to reframe the way people thought about health and happiness. And to put context around that, we didn't want people to think of just health and happiness as physical health, like what you put in your body, how you train your body. We felt that the mind was a core component, if not the central component, for living a healthy and happier life. If you think about your mind, that is the thing that you make all of your choices in life. The food you eat, the exercise you take, the people you hang out with. Unless you have a healthy, stable mind, it's really difficult to make the right choices in your life that are going to lead to kind of health and happiness. So I think we always saw that as, okay, how do we demystify meditation and make looking after the healthier mind as normal as it is to brush your teeth? Technology has enabled it to scale at a rate that we would never have been able to get to 42 million people if we'd just gone workplace to workplace, person to person, you know, if it had just been live. I think at the same time, technology in the world that we live in has become more pressured and more difficult to navigate, and we are always on. And I think that has caused people to be a lot more aware of their mind and potentially how unhealthy it is at times, and to think about ways that they can manage that. We've had these macro trends from society that have really enabled it, plus this kind of technology kind of layer that has enabled us to scale it. I think what has surprised me is, so in America now, more people self-report to meditate regularly than they do yoga, which is incredible. And that has happened in a really short space of time. And I think that is surprising. And I think the openness for the conversation around how we look after our health and mind in business, in government, in schools, amongst teachers, I think that has happened way quicker than we ever thought it would. We always wanted to get there. I just think it's happened at a rate that is kind of was beyond our wildest dreams.
When you mentioned impact and purpose when we started talking, I wonder if that vision of health and happiness, if those meet now. Is that purpose working out for you?
For me, it definitely is, because we get the emails every single day of like the impact that it's had on people. You know, we had a video the other day of a child with extreme autism, and you wouldn't think, maybe if you thought about it, that our service would work for a severely autistic child, but it did. It really did. And he was getting bullied at school, and he wrote in and said, I think the service could be used for all kids with autism, and it's like really helped me. And his mum sent a video in of him, and I just thought to myself, that's one person of 42 million. Imagine all the stories. And I could tell you, I could list off 1,000 of stories like that. So I think that it's having that impact. I think for us, it's still, how do we move the conversation on where it just becomes so normal, it's like brushing your teeth. That it's just something everyone does. Yeah. And we get it to prevention. And I don't think we're at prevention yet, where people are doing this as a way to keep their mind healthy when life is going to hit them, because it's going to hit them.
Yeah.
And I think when it gets there, that for me is what it really feels like for us to have achieved our vision. It's when it's really normal, it's baked into our lives, it's in schools, it's in hospitals, and it's just seen as a very normal thing, a preventative thing that we do as kind of mental hygiene, like kind of flossing your mind. That, for me, would feel like real success.
I wonder about, in your own journey, how you see meditation and mindfulness now, because you're the CEO of this company that's really growing. And actually, interesting to note, you weren't always the CEO. You just took over that role 2 years ago.
I was the reluctant CEO. That would be fair.
So what's your relationship with that now? How are you dealing with stress and anxiety and those things now?
Yeah, well, I still get stressed. I still get anxious. I still get worried. Like, I'm basically still a human being that has flaws. I think just because I sit down and do meditation with my eyes closed every day, it doesn't mean that I don't have all those experiences. I think what is different is that I have some perspective about it. And before, when I used to get anxious, I used to think, I'm an anxious person. Oh, my God, I've got anxiety. And I thought it would never change. It would just be a loop. And I thought I was going to be like that for the rest of my life. And meditation has given me an opportunity to kind of go, oh, that's anxiety. I still feel it. It's not like I don't go, oh, I don't get that feeling in my stomach, or but I just don't stay in it for as long as I used to. I just have a different framework to deal with it. And I think that that is the real magic, is that if you practice regularly, and I've never missed a day since the day that I met Andy, I've meditated every single day. And the only reason I've done that is because I feel like it just gives me the center point that I can always come back to, the sense of grounding that no matter what goes on, I know I can get back there. And sometimes it takes me longer than I would like to get back to that point.
Right.
I know it's there. So I used to feel helpless. And so, you know, for anyone out there that's struggling, one, I think it's okay to struggle. Two, I think if you want to learn a skill that you can build into your life and make it a habit, I'm biased, but I do think, and even if you don't use Headspace, use something else. I don't really mind. Like, but it's a wonderful, wonderful tool, meditation, to kind of start to help you deal with these things. And for me, it's a deeply personal practice, and it's the kind of center point of everything I do. And without it, there's no way that I would be able to do my job or be a good husband or be a good son. Like, all of those things, I think, come from a solid practice.
Yeah. Does Andy still help you? What's your relationship like now?
It's kind of emotional, really, when I think about Andy, because I kind of feel, you know, it sounds dramatic, but I do feel like he kind of saved my life at that moment, you know, when I met him. Like, I was very desperate and lost, and he kind of showed me a way. And it's not like he did it for me, but he kind of gave me guidance, and he was a friendly, non-judgmental person that said, I think I can help you with this, and I'm going to pass on what someone taught me and see if it can help you. And it did. And so that's a very unique, special relationship. And yeah, I go to him for advice. He married my wife and I. He was the person that married us. We go on holiday together. Our wives are actually currently starting a business together. We moved to America together. You know, we went through his cancer. Like, we're very, very, very close. And it's not a traditional kind of business relationship. Mm. And it's not that we don't have debates about things, but we never argue. We're very aligned, because we're very aligned around that vision. And his personal experience, my personal experiences, they're not the same, but they're very aligned. And I think that's what's always kind of kept us very, very close ever since we first started. Mm.
Do you like that learning curve, the journey of triumphs and failures? The startup story of not having any experience isn't totally new, but you've gone through this journey. Is it rewarding?
The most rewarding thing is the members in the community. I mean, we were in Germany last week, and it's in another language. It's kind of wild. You're just like, wow, this thing is so much bigger than any of us individually. And then you hear the stories like the one, you know, with the kid that had that severe autism, or someone that was dying, and their mum, and they shared their last moments together using the Headspace product, like, or a professional athlete that is using it to win gold at the Olympics. These are all real stories. And you think, wow, I've been lucky enough to be a part of that. And so however hard it gets, and it does get hard, that is the thing that always gets me up in the morning, always allows me to get past the hard moments. And that's the thing that's rewarding. I think unless you're willing to be endlessly curious and always kind of show up every day with like a beginner's mind and be open to learning, I just don't think you can do the job. Like, I think you have to be open in that way. And I would like to think that I try and approach it like that. I think the difficult moments is where you resist it. I think that's where you kind of get that's where I struggle anyway. I can't speak for anyone else, but I think it's when I try and resist that process that you find it hard.
Thank you very much to Rich Pearson for sharing this story of Headspace. You can find out more at headspace.com or on their smartphone app. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.